Thanks, Kim, for organizing the session, and Paul, and Rachel, and Chris. This was a perfect segue for my presentation, so it's great how Paul and Rachel set the stage. Here I would like to talk about a very practical, pragmatic approach, how to build community resilience. I arrived on Sunday from Stockholm, and when I arrived, everybody was cheering, and of course I was completely oblivious to what's going on in the city. And then I sleep on the floor at my friend's house in Fillmore, in downtown San Francisco here. And of course, nobody's going to bed at that time because everybody's out on the street partying. And so I went out and partied with everybody else, and it was a great example of watching how social networks emerge spontaneously. And this talk here is trying to get at this issue of building social networks and creating social capital in order to build community resilience and community capacity to deal with these climate change stressors that we are facing. And I'd like to tell you about a little example that we worked on in Portland to do exactly that. So I would like to talk about a social intervention to enhance community capacity and resilience through urban interventions to attenuate the adverse impacts of climate change on these communities. So what can we, the public health community, do to adverse these impacts, and how can we build social capacity and social capital in communities to address these stressors? We all know that climate change has a lot of different facets and a lot of different types of impacts, like the melting of the ice caps or big storms are hitting the East Coast, as you know. Another one is the heat island effect that Paul mentioned, where the urban core in urban cities absorb the heat during the day, and then they radiate that heat at night. And so there's no relief, and that constant impact of that heat exposure increases heat-related mortality and morbidity dramatically, particularly among vulnerable populations. And you can see that the further out and further away you go from the core in the more rural area, that heat island effect diminishes, but the temperatures are much higher in the urban core. And that is particularly true in an urban setting like this, where you have this urban grid with very little green spaces, where there's concrete and asphalt, black surfaces everywhere that absorbs that heat and then radiates at night. So there are lots of urban stressors here that, as a result of climate change, and how can we approach this issue both from a societal or social perspective, but also from the environmental perspective. So the way that we use land, our land use decisions have environmental impacts. You can see here air pollution, climate change, water quality, water quantity. It also has implications on the way that we live and our social determinants like mental health, social networks, and social capital. It has impact on lifestyles like physical inactivity and so on. So the decisions that we make, the way we want to use our land, has a lot of implications and ramifications. And the thing that we did in this particular community here in Portland, we went into the community to identify the issues in this particular community to see what is the problem in this community that needs to be addressed. In the one that I would like to show you today, we had a lot of issues with crime, there was prostitution, there was drug use and issues like that. So we go out into the community, we do outreach, and we collect that information through community meetings, and we ask the neighbors, what kind of skills do you guys have to address those issues? We do asset mapping. So we identify the architects, the landscape designers, the community organizers, all those different capacities in the community that can potentially help us solve these issues. Then we set up a design workshop trying to solve that problem and trying to bring people together to do physical improvements in the built urban environment. We go to the city to get city approval, and then we conduct construction workshops and evaluations and so on, and constantly improve the project. In this particular case that I'll show you in a second, you know, we proposed this change of the built urban environment, and when we submitted the plans to the city, they were just laughing at us. You can't just come here and do all these things in the urban space because that's public space. And we said, precisely, It is public space. This is what the community wants. It's not going to cost you anything. It's going to have all these benefits. This is a no-brainer. And we basically pushed it through the city administration by talking to the councillors and all that, and eventually they approved that. It's a long story, and I'll only give you some highlights of that, but let me show you some of the issues. The thing that we would like to achieve ultimately is to improve social capital. And social capital is just like that green paper that we pass around among ourselves. When you want to buy a bagel, you give them a piece of paper, and they believe it's worth anything, right? Because we all do. So that green paper has the capacity, the ability to do something for you. Social networks have exactly the same capacity to do something like that, and that's called social capital. So social networks have an inherent ability to solve problems for you by pooling these resources. And the goal of our interventions was to increase social capital. There are several facets to social capital. One is the bonding or localized social capital, which means that you have a lot of great networks among people that are very similar to you. And so you know your cousin, your aunt, your friends, your lover and all that. So you know all these people that are very similar to you, and that's very good. However, it doesn't help you to solve problems because you don't know anyone who is different than you. And that's where the bridging social capital comes in, linking with people that are outside of your immediate social circle and connecting with city officials and regulators and so on that helps you to solve the bigger problems. And so this project here is trying to improve both the localized or the bonding social capital as well as the bridging social capital. And there are those two very important components to this particular intervention. And you can see here that social capital, it's a complicated slide here, at the very top is defined by trust, reciprocity, and community participation and mutual cooperation, and it can create a localized capital, a bridging social capital. In the end, when you go down that path, it promotes collective action and localized local problem solving to improve healthy environments for healthy people. This is what we're trying to do. This is the strategy that we're trying to achieve with this particular intervention. And you can see here that through this stepwise procedure, we hope to improve the bridging social capital by asset mapping and design workshops. So you connect with the designers in your neighborhood or the builders in your neighborhood. You meet with people that are slightly different than you, but still within your community. And then you bring that to city approval. That's the linking social capital, where you connect with people that have more power than you because they have an official position. That's the linking social capital. And then you bring the community out to build those features, and that's the bonding social capital, because then that's when you make friends. That's when you connect to those people that are your neighbors and your colleagues and all that, and that's where you can enhance the bonding social capital. This here is one of these workshops that we had. We articulated the issues and we came up with different design options. We took an intersection just like this one here and decided to paint a gigantic sunflower in the middle of the intersection. And we submitted that for city approval and they were just laughing at us. You can't just go out and paint the street. The street is here to be driven on. And we took it to the councillors and we brought them on board and they said, no, this is a no-brainer, we're going to do this, and they approved this process. It was an incredible thing. You can only do that in Portland. It's probably the most progressive city in the U.S. We also wanted to improve the physical environment by putting in hanging gardens, and you see these trellises. These are trellises on the four different corners. Those are for hanging gardens to improve the green spaces. We created urban gardens and planted trees and so on to attenuate the heat island effect. And we created a little group that was responsible for all these activities. The VBC stands for the Village Building Convergence. We had people that responsible for the actual activities, the intersection repair project, the event design. We created a big event around it. We had a planting committee, a training committee, a housing committee to bring all these people to the table. And in fact, we did that not just on one site, we did it in several sites. And so this is like a fractal structure of all the different activities that were going on in Portland at this one particular week. This is done every single year in May, between May and June, where 20 projects are happening at once in the city. And every single group or every single activity has all the different components to it. As an epidemiologist, of course, we wanted to evaluate this impact, and we did the pre- and post-evaluation. Every single individual in a two-block radius was his or her own control. So we did a panel study by asking individuals, submitted a survey before and after, so every person could control for themselves. And we had something like 265 individuals that completed the survey before and after. You see that the neighborhood was actually a predominantly white neighborhood, because that is Portland. But we had a neighborhood with predominantly renters, like the Sunnyside, and then another one where there's more owner-occupied in Buckman. You can see the income. We go from low to middle-income neighborhoods and some education variables on there as well. And in Sunnyside neighborhood, the community decided that they want to build these trellises and a big dome structure. They wanted to paint the sunflower, as I mentioned. They built a green roof, planters in the street, the street mural in Buckman, urban gardens, and a cop bench and so on, and all kinds of different types of features that the community decided would enhance their social capital and address their issues. This one here is the Sunnyside neighborhood. This is like a solar-powered water fountain on the corner. The glass tiles are all put in by the community. The cob wall. Cob is an alternative building material that's climate change negative because it combines clay, straw, sand, and water. So it doesn't use any cement, which puts out a lot of CO2, as you know. On the right, you see an information kiosk where the community can post information about the community for the community, like yoga classes and guitar lessons and babysitting and so on. On the roof of this little feature here on this structure, you have it's a green little roof. There's a solar panel up here too that lights up the kiosk. In this particular neighborhood, they put in the benches, and up here in the very top corner, you see a chess board that was placed in the ground where people come and play chess with a little bench up there. And the planters in the street to slow down traffic. Here in this neighborhood, they put in more seating and another information kiosk for the community. And here, this one here is like a dome rising ceremony, just like an Amish barn rising ceremony, where the community comes together to rise this dome on the corner of this intersection. And I had a neighbor, he told me, you know, we don't need to lift this up ourselves. I can bring a crane in and we can lift this up with a crane. No, that's not the point. The point is that people come together and do this together. This is what we're trying to achieve. This is exactly the point, that everybody comes together and raises the dome onto the pillar on the corner. So here is the evaluation. We were able to document an improvement in the sense of community, some improvement here in social interactions. We didn't see anything about perceived control over the neighborhood or neighborhood participation that was not statistically significant, but social capital improved, and we administered 11-point mental health or depression scale, and we were able to document that it was improvement in mental health as well, because people were finally able to connect with their neighbors, make friends, and came out of their isolation and felt much better as a result of the intervention. So these are some of the ideas and types that can be implemented. For example, increase urban forestry for shading and evaporation, and we have urban vegetation in order to decrease air conditioning, ambient cooling, and improving air quality, urban gardens for shading and local food production, green roofs for reducing rooftop temperatures, lessening pressures on the sewer system by reducing the runoff, and then cool roofs, which basically white roofs that reflect a lot of the heat to reduce energy bills and increase indoor. This is what some of this looks like. This building here was built by the community with a green roof here at the top. There's another green roof on top of this one here with some sage that sustains the heat. Here are some other examples, putting in cool pavement, which has these pervious surfaces with cooling pavements, then window screens to protect against emerging vector-borne diseases, vector abatement to prevent propagation of vector-borne diseases, habitat restoration and rainwater storage and so on. This here is an example of the bioswale. Again, this was put in by the community with city permission and all that collects runoff from the street and filters the water and sinks it back into the aquifer so it doesn't go into the sewer system. Basically, the whole approach is trying to question this traditional sense or the traditional concept of public health, where you have this very vertical structure of public health, where public health officials tell communities or schools or families and individuals what to do and are supposed to interact with other sectors, which of course they don't really do. You can see this is perforated here, so this interaction doesn't really work that well. But we have a closed box here with a traditional sense of public health. And this particular concept of public health, I call it lateral public health, to denote the concept of thinking outside the box, lateral thinking, where we break open the box of public health and community members take on the initiative to decide what is important in their community, what needs to be addressed, and bring those issues to the table to interact with government, to get the permission to do what they need to do in order to improve the built urban environment, but also the social capital in their community. So the reason we do this, and this is a photograph of Portland, is not that it can be seen from outer space. That is exactly not the point. The reason we're doing this is to improve social capital. So the sunflower is not the end, it's not the reason why this is being implemented. The purpose is to increase social capital. And I think these data vindicate the merits of public participation in urban design with direct benefits to public health. Social interventions can create human-scale urban landscapes to improve social capital in order to increase community resilience against climate change stressors. I'll leave it at that.